Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stark from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. For many, the COVID pandemic has been a difficult time to live through, not least for the residents of Melbourne in Australia, who may well have had to endure the longest lockdown of any city. For Dan Coop, a curator and producer, the lockdown appears to have actually given him an opportunity to explore new ways of working, reconnecting with his immediate neighbourhood environment, as well as tackling common societal issues from a local perspective. I catch up with him midway through an extended European trip on a sunny afternoon in July 2024. We're walking together along an unmade road on the outskirts of Girona in Spain.
Dan, when I look at your email signature, it tells me that you're a creative producer,
curator,
and now you're doing a PhD, so you're a researcher.
Yeah, trying to be.
But actually, you're an amalgam of all sorts of media skills and talents.
Yeah.
So which came first and how did it all begin?
Yeah, well, artist is always the first thing that I tell people I am, because it's the one that is the hardest to assert upon the world. I find getting work as a curator and a producer is a little different. It's a little more of a trade rather than a kind of... it's a skill set that I can kind of exchange for cash. Whereas being an artist is not always that transactional and kind of not that simple. So my art kind of finds its home now kind of in a public art kind of context, but I started in drama, did shows in theatres, of course. But then I started to be fascinated by unusual spaces, found spaces, site-specific work. But I did a master's of public art, so I kind of then started to have a foot in the visual art camp as well. So do people think of sculpture and murals and graffiti? I've worked in a little bit of all of those, probably more as a producer, curator, but that's not me. So I'm more temporary public art, so using the skills of dramaturgy, storytelling, performance, and locating that in public spaces. So I feel like I don't have the right name for that yet. It's part of what my research is trying to figure out, is how do we define that, and would it matter? If I found a better definition, would it help? Or is the conversation about, like, what is art actually one of the best parts about that kind of loose definition?
We're walking along a route somewhere in Girona. Neither of us are totally convinced we know where we are. We're walking beside quite a bulk of water, which I'm really surprised about. I thought, you know, streams and rivers were all dry by this time of year.
Yeah, so. Well, in the centre of Girona, it's... a concreted river, and it looks a little forlorn, and it does flow, but not very strongly. But I think we're a little upstream here, and it's going all right.
Now, you've just been out and about with a Zoom recorder, and so are you a kind of field recordist?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about your sound recording and sound practice. Let's go from there, and then we'll work our way towards the walking art, which is...
Yeah.
A challenge for both of us.
Well, yes. So I have my field recorder, and I do like to record the sounds. Right now, as we're walking, I'm hearing mostly the trickle of the water going over rocks. I'm actually listening for the birds. I'm not familiar with these birds. This is not my country. So I'm curious, but they catch my ear and then they draw my eye. But really, the reason I use Zoom most often is to record voice, like you're doing now with me. And so I often talk to people in place. And I've done quite a few projects that involve that. So rather than a podcast that is disembodied and displaced, I like to kind of play those recordings back at the site where they were first recorded as a kind of echo. You know, a lot of the work I make is not very material-based, it's time-based. And so it's nice to have a connection back and a way for others to kind of connect in, and sound is a lovely way to do that. That bird's beautiful.
Yeah, just arrived in time.
But I must admit, I feel like I've done enough voice, enough listening to people, and I'm really starting, as I've just described, to really wanting to listen to country, to landscape, to the non-human as well. And so that's, I hope, where my practice is leading me at the moment. I'd like to explore more.
Okay, and so let's get into this walking art. How did you, first of all, how did you first encounter it and then embrace it?
Look, my notion of walking art probably goes back to artists like Janet Cardiff. I've done that walk that starts at Whitechapel in London.
Yeah.
And also my partner, Claire Korobach, is part of a group called One Step at a Time Like This, and they did a show called En Route. And that show, you walk through towns and cities in different ways. I often describe it as a bit like a Jackie Chan movie where you run through the kitchen and people are chopping food, and then you kind of go down the fire escape, and then you kind of rush past somebody. And so it's never a tour that is the standard. It's always kind of seeing things from behind and having a real encounter with the city. So, for example, that work is from 2009, and I've seen that in many cities. But I don't think they ever called it walking art. So the term walking art has really only come into my lexicon in the last 12 months. Maybe since I was in Prespa in Greece at the Walking Arts Encounters.
So what drew you to that? How did you even find out about it?
Look, the time was right. Greece sounded good. It was cold in Melbourne. I had some research money burning a hole in my pocket. And, yeah, I'm curious and still am to this day, 12 months later. Do I like the term walking artist or walking art? Or do I find it works for me? Or do I just find that there's a really interesting mix of movement, I think is probably what I'm more interested in, rather than just 2 feet. Any movement, so I can see a bike coming towards us. I've done pieces with bikes before. I've done pieces on public transport. I've done pieces in buses, on a boat. So movement is probably more the thing that kind of is the common denominator of my practice. But I love how walking does connect you to landscape, to the ecologies of place as well. So,
yeah, I mean, the thing I find about walking is that, well, you know, we're walking along at a reasonably gentle pace. Mm. We can hear the sounds around us. If something moves, which is small, on the ground, we're likely to see that movement. We're not going to see it if we're either cycling by or certainly not in a car.
Yes.
And then also, you know, you spot something or you hear something and you can stop and I can stop too. And we can then, you know, converse and change direction.
Yes.
So walking has all that advantage.
It's very flexible and very responsive. Very cheap as well. I like how cheap walking is.
Well, I like it because you'll probably guess when I started doing podcasting, we had dial-up modem. Mm. So, you basically had to have something pretty small for people to be able to download it or stream it and listen to it.
Yeah. When it comes to walking, I used to jog the Merri Creek. That's on Wurundjeri country where I live in Melbourne. And that was my kind of daily, weekly, you know, routine just for fitness, stress relief, all that good stuff you get from jogging. And I got to know the place pretty well. But then COVID hit, of course, and instead of running on my own, I started walking with my partner, Claire. We had a lovely time and it was kind of great to be out of the house. So, you know, some parts of COVID were really fantastic. But then we were walking along one day and I said, oh, look at the wattle blooming. It's beautiful. It wasn't blooming last week. And then all of a sudden I said, oh, there's some more wattle. It's not the same plant. And on that just one walk, I noticed 7 different kinds of wattle. And how many hundreds of times have I run past that wattle and just thought it was the same colour, therefore it's the same plant, therefore there's nothing to learn here?
Oh, it's this guy. Trying to work out what's the harm, and of course we're walking past some kind of pump or something.
Yeah.
And the poor guy's out.
No,
it's good. Don't worry, because we've done 10 or 12 minutes coming this way.
Okay.
You know, we can just
cruise
back gently.
Great.
And so restrictions of COVID that made us have to walk our neighbourhood over and over again, you actually found that in a way... life-affirming, or at least made you more connected to the nature of which you're part? Is that the kind of thing you...
It made me slow down. It made me attend to the local. And I think in a massive political moment, as well as a social and... It was a global thing. I became highly attuned to my neighbourhood. And that's a positive, actually. And the slowing down is a positive, too. So I've resisted speeding back up again since things have opened. But in Naarm in Melbourne, there's a very particular context. We had 262 days of lockdown, which I think probably China has a few cities that had longer, but you know, it's one of the most lockdown cities. I think largely, broadly, people got behind it, but there was kind of opportunities for interventions. So you could leave the house to get a vaccine, to go to the doctor, to give care to a housemate or someone else you needed to, a family member, and to go shopping. So I created one podcast for shopping. That was an intervention into the Preston market, where you started in front of your empty fridge or cupboard. We had a conversation about what food culture is to you. When I say conversation, me and my colleague Katerina Pokonos-Kennedy discussed this for the listener. We talked about what the art of living was in these circumstances and how we could practice care even through finding good food for the family. And we made our way to the Preston market, talked about what it is, what trade means. As you travel there, we did a kind of potted history of trade and commerce. But also that kind of covered the local First Nations trade that, you know, has roots all the way up from down south, all the way up through Central Australia. It's kind of acknowledging that trade doesn't always have to be about finance. It doesn't actually always have to be a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
There can be exchange. So that whole kind of shopping experience really interrogates what care is, what exchange can be instead of transaction. It was a kind of intervention into the rules. So you were allowed to go shopping, you were allowed to leave the house, and we still thought you were allowed to have culture. So we were kind of there more about physical distance rather than social distance. And that was the phrase that was often used in Australia, was social distancing.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the PhD. Is that something you've now completed? Or?
Well, by the time the listener listens to it, I will have either finished it or died trying. No, so that market project is part of it. Another project I did down the Mornington Peninsula on Bunurong country was a part of a project called Front Beach, Back Beach, which encouraged, you know, rather than walking, a kind of like holiday tour up and down this peninsula, which is well known as a holiday district, really exploring some of the different unique places there. So there's 15 different commissions there. I worked with a company called Gold Satino, who made a performance on a bus. Kind of re-queered this seaside suburb, and it happens to be the seaside suburb where I spent a lot of my childhood at the beach, kind of wondering what my body and how it fit into this bronzed Aussie kind of scenario. So I really loved how they re-queered that space and kind of reclaimed a bit of it and put some very abstract and surreal subversive action into that kind of otherwise buttoned down kind of area. And another project I've done is called Flowing Loops, and I walk the route of a suburban rail line that's being built as a tunnel, and sometimes we follow the rail line as closely as we can above ground, and sometimes we follow the routes of existing paths in the landscape, so like waterways, and we try and resist the roads and the Google Map view of things. We try and re-encounter country and re-encounter the scenario that's happening through those suburbs.
And have you made those into sound walks?
So that particular project, I walked to six train stations with six different artists, dancers, musicians, designers, all kinds. And we encountered things and people along the way. And so when we met someone interesting, we would record an interview with them to kind of talk about the outdoor practices and the culture of this community. So some good examples are we went bird watching with friends of Carcrook Park. Emerging bird nerd is what I say. That's not on my business card, but that's how I define myself. And they taught me all about the birds that they knew after doing surveys there for 20-odd years, every month. It's amazing. And we taught them about our public art skills or our kind of skills of observation and interpretation that we have in an artistic realm. Another group we bumped into and discovered a different kind of walking and a different kind of community practice was the frisbee golf players, the disc golf players. So they're walking is a very much a zigzag following the disc.
I'm not sure what a frisbee golf player is.
We all know golf, I presume. So instead of a golf ball, you have a frisbee. You don't have clubs, you just throw it. So you throw it as far as you can towards the pin, veers off to the left or to the right, you follow it, you pick it up again, you go again. How many strokes? So, you know, they have a different style of walking, a different community that they gather around, a different way of engaging with that landscape, and so we wanted to hear about that from them. For me, it always comes to the fact that I'm a visitor in those suburbs. I'm a visitor actually on that continent, you know, being a part of a white fella family, do you know what I mean? It's a continent that was colonised and there was a war there and the war's ongoing and there's no treaty. So it's a very vexed situation, you know, being a settler there, but also having many generations of my family live there. And I do have a connection to landscape and country, but it's vexed.
So what next? You know, once the PhD is done and packed up and put away, will we see you at future walking art encounters, or will we see your name in bright lights on Broadway, or will we, you know...
It's a great question.
At the moment, where do you think things might be going?
Look, today, right now, in 2024, I'm in week six of a fantastic trip through Europe, and I've loved every second of it, but I'm a visitor here as well. And for all the vexed problems I have to deal with at home, personal, political, social, historical, that's my problem. The problems here in Girona of bicycle tourism and people not being able to speak Catalan, that's their problem. And so I'm kind of actually part of the problem here, and I'm part of the problem back home, but I have more of a responsibility back home. So in some way, I've loved my time here, but I've got to go home and try and work on that in my small cultural way and my personal way. And so the kind of bigger answer to that is, well, who knows, but I'd really like to figure out a way to walk with First Nations people. It's been a big part of the PhD, which I haven't talked about at all, but that's really the kind of most confronting and difficult part of it, and especially as Australia voted not to give a voice to Parliament to First Nations people that they've asked for. That voice to Parliament is kind of like a mechanism to kind of be heard and to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
And the Australian people didn't hear that, evidently. So kind of listening is kind of the thing that I aim to do more of next. So, yeah, you know, in any artistic practice, there's a kind of period of reflection that's required, and maybe a sponge that soaks up something and then you squeeze it out again. But it's really difficult to know, but I think that big old problem of colonization and how we move together as a in some kind of relationship is the big question I've got to ask. And whether that's art, I don't know, whether that's culture, I think it is.
You can choose a walk in your neighborhood, or you could choose a conceptual walk, but you could choose a walk you've encountered for the first time, or something that's on your bucket list.
Yep.
Yep. So, but please, if you can suggest a couple of walks to my listeners, that'd be great.
Well, where I live is on Wurundjeri country. That's Kulin Nation in Naam or Melbourne. You might know it as. And I often walk the Merry Creek. And it's a name for the creek that's almost right. It's Merry Merry, which means rocky. And so I think that's a beautiful walk. It connects into the Birrarung, the Yarra. So it's one of those kinds of major waterways that connect. What I love about it is that you can see suburbs and houses either side, but you can also find pockets that really do feel pretty special. So that's a great urban walk that people can do that connects back into nature and landscape and country. And then... it's interesting, because when you say walks, I hear you, but I often actually think about rivers. I kind of want to do more rivers than trails. So one of the things I'd love to do is to go down to La Trawida, Tasmania, and do some of those water trails through there. So down the west coast of Tasmania, it's supposedly wild, and I think it is, and it's got sea spray coming in and amazing bushland. So I'd love to do that west coast of Tasmania. That would be fantastic.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Dan Coop. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.